Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich, and a good Aloha Friday to you, Chris Vandercook.
Good morning, Beth Ann. It's been a while now since we first heard about this issue at Pearl Harbor Memorial, Arizona Memorial.
And issues of corruption and ethical problems that we thought would not be happening in a place such as that.
Exactly.
Well, that's our first conversation this morning. Now, you know, most employees expect that when their manager tells them to do something that they don't necessarily like, they're probably going to just have to do it because it's part of the job. But that's not how John Landrysmith says he felt when his manager told him to forget about his concerns over the shortage of Arizona Memorial tickets. Those tickets, you know, are supposed to be free, but over the last year, they've been generating a lot of money for tour companies. According to National Park Service and other reports, the company sold the tickets to tourists, and managers at the Arizona Memorial knew about the arrangement. John Landrysmith is now mounting a legal challenge, and he's with us this morning. Thank you for being here.
You're very welcome.
When were you first aware that this scheme to sell tickets to tour companies was happening?
It began in early 2013, around the May-June time period. And basically, when they began to sell the tickets, now some of the reports, I'll have to admit, as far as the sales in the parking lot and things like that, we did hear those, but I never personally had any experience with that aspect of it. That wasn't necessarily the sales that were being done.
So you got a tip. How were you tipped off?
Well, actually, what it was these sales were being done internally. So what was happening was a gentleman named Carlton Kramer from Pacific Historic Parks would actually talk to the tour companies and get reservation times. So basically blocks of tickets that they wanted to come down. He would then put that give me that reservation. I would input that into what we called an internal VIP list. The VIP list was meant to be for friends, families, dignitaries that were coming to make sure that we had tickets set aside for them. But unfortunately, what began to happen was they would use this VIP list to pull these tickets before the first visitors would even come into the park in the morning.
So the VIP list became co-opted into a tour list gift.
Yes, that's basically how the system worked. They would put these reservations on the VIP list. So basically the way it works out, there's 150 tickets per 15-minute program. Now, 100 of those are set aside for the recreation.gov reservation system, but for each program, there's supposed to be 50 tickets available for what we called walk-ups, those guests that would come, wait in line, come in, and we would give them the next available time. What they began to do was basically circumvent that system and offer those 50 tickets to the tour companies if they wanted to purchase them. The deal was if they purchased them, they would have to purchase the audio tour, but it would guarantee them a time. That, of course, gave the tour companies an unfair advantage in that they would have tickets before the first guest would even walk in the door.
When this scheme was hatched and you were told about it and told that regardless of your concerns, this is the way it was going to be, that hadn't been the first time that there had been issues of low, you know, morale or problems with people dealing with their supervisors at the park.
No, there had been many. The first investigation, in fact, the one that came out most recently from the peers group, the Hamilton investigation, was actually sent to the park to find out why the morale was so low and were these questions about the management legitimate. In that investigation was when myself and some of the others began to basically uncover the tickets and what was going on with the tickets to Mr. Hamilton. From there, he took his report back, and shortly thereafter, a second investigation was sent out, and that one was specifically targeted at the tickets and what was going on with the ticketing system.
And that came out through the Regional Parks Division?
Yes. So the first investigation was sent to us from our regional office in San Francisco where Mr. Hamilton works. He went back to San Francisco, and then the second team was sent out from the regional office again to see exactly what was going on with the ticketing.
As all this was going on, was there any discussion within your group that this wasn't something that should be happening and that you as a group should be saying something and be a little bit more vocal than you had been?
There were. You know, one of the hard parts about this is that it is a federal position. And you know, there are a lot of good people that are still there that were very afraid that if they continued to speak out and continued to say this is not right, that they may in fact lose their position. Myself, I knew I was kind of already on the outside, so I was not worried about being outspoken. What I knew was that this was not right and that it needed to be stopped.
When did you first come out and start to say anything?
The first time I spoke to someone, I spoke to a gentleman named Robert Burke, who at the time was our chief of commercial services. Now, realistically, in the hierarchy of the Park Service, he should have been the one to be involved with any situation with the tour companies.
Had he been circumvented?
Yes. When I told him about this and I showed him the VIP list, he was outraged. He had no idea that this program was even happening. He then took it to Paul Dupre, who was the superintendent. Now, I don't know what their exact conversation was. I talked to Robert afterwards, and he said that he was reprimanded. The next day, I was called into Mr. Middleton, Frank Middleton, our education coordinator, who was also heading up this program, basically, and given a verbal warning for insubordination and told, basically, if you don't like the ticketing system, it's my system, and we'll just have to agree to disagree, and I will run it the way I see fit.
Despite the fact that those tickets were supposed to be available to people. And that those were put out, and there are rules about that.
Yes, yes. See, and that in itself was one of the reasons why I knew this program was not right. The park itself, besides recreation.gov, prior to that, there were no monetary transactions at the park. It was all free. We had no way of handling money, doing anything with money, and all of a sudden we've started a program that has no regulation and really no way of knowing where that money went. Now, the one thing I always make sure to do, I never asked. I didn't want to know what they were doing with the money, how they were collecting the money, or where that money was going. We were told that it was going to be used to get us more positions, to get us more staffing. But
did you ever have any evidence of that?
We were told in meetings how it was being distributed, what the charge was being for the ticket. So it was very, they were very open about that aspect of it.
You see the results of what they said would happen because that money was coming in?
No.
Is there any trail to where that money went?
I do not know. I made absolutely sure that I had no idea where they were, how they were even charging these companies, or where that money was going.
But as you've come out and had these conversations, has anybody come to you and said to you anything at all or added to the story of what happened to that money?
No, not really. I mean, it was very, very closed. And then once the second investigation came for ticketing, and as Mr. Dupre said, they immediately shut it down. From there, we really don't know what happened. So for that span of those months when all that money was being made, really don't know what exactly happened to it.
As the person in your office who was interfacing with the tour companies was having conversations, do you know if there was any backwash from the tour company saying, aren't these tickets supposed to be free to people?
Oh, no. And it what it did, honestly, was it gave some of the tour companies really an unfair advantage in the sense that normally prior to this ticketing situation, the way that it worked, and I actually was a tour guide prior to getting my job with the Park Service, and the way that it used to work was you had to be there, bring your group down. Mm-hmm. Once you came in the doors and you had your people with you, the Park Service would give you that exact number of tickets that you had. By allowing tour companies to just make a reservation for a set time, they had the flexibility of saying, okay, well, we've got 9 o'clock tickets, so we can just get there when we get there.
One final question. Now that all of this story is continuing to build and you have a lawsuit, you're taking legal lounge, have you had more people come to you and add to this story beyond just your experience and the things that you say that you don't really know, like perhaps what has happened with these tour companies and which tour companies they were?
Yes, I've still got some very good friends with the Park Service who have told me that there is much more to this story, and that as this comes out, more of that will be coming out as well.
Do you know the tour companies involved?
Honestly, ma'am, I was informed by my lawyer not to mention. I do know the companies involved, but I'm not going to name the companies involved just to be safe on the legal side of it.
And all this will be coming out as further reports happen.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. We'll be looking to see what comes out of those and what happens and how the park is being restructured, which it hasn't yet been done.
No, ma'am. As of yet, there really was nothing done as a result of these investigations.
All right. Thanks very much for coming in. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
John Landrysmith is a former staff member at the Arizona Memorial. He's now part of a legal challenge over the ticketing issues at the park.